This is Polyphonic Press. The podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random.
All right, hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is PJ Harvey, Dry.
Okay. I don't know much about her.
I know she's very respected, but I haven't really listened to her. But here's a description of the album. It says, Dry, released in 1992, is PJ Harvey's fierce and arresting debut album, an explosive arrival that instantly set her apart from every other voice in early 90s alternative rock. Recorded with her original trio, Rob Ellis and Steve Vaughn, the album is raw, unvarnished, and emotionally unfiltered, driven by jagged guitars, stark arrangements, and Harvey's commanding, shape-shifting vocals. Thematically, Dry plunges into desire, bodily autonomy, vulnerability, and power, often flipping traditional gender roles on their head. Songs like Dress expose the expectations placed on women with biting wit, while Sheila Na Gig merges mythology and sexuality into something both confrontational and darkly humorous. Throughout the album, Harvey wields minimalism like a weapon. The production is rough, the edges deliberately frayed, making every lyric and every tremor in her voice hit with greater force. Despite, or because of its grit, Dry sounds remarkably self-assured for a debut. It's visceral, urgent, and unafraid of messy emotions, introducing PJ Harvey as an artist who wouldn't just push boundaries, she would explode them. Over time, the album has come to be seen as one of the defining statements of 90s indie rock and a blueprint for countless artists who followed.
Okay.
Okay, so this album was released on the 30th of March, 1992. The genres are alternative rock, indie rock, blues rock, and post-punk, and was released on Two Pure Records and produced by Head, Rob Ellis, and PJ Harvey. And if you're listening along, which we do encourage you to do, we've linked the album to both Spotify and Apple Music. But there isn't really a side one and side two because it's right when CDs were taking off. So it just has 11 songs on the album. So what we'll do is the album starts with the song Oh My Lover, and we'll stop after the fifth song, Happy and Bleeding. So we'll stop at the halfway mark and halfway discussion. So if you're listening along with us, if you want to stop it after the song Happy and Bleeding to listen to the halfway discussion. But without further ado, okay, here is the first song on the album, Oh My Lover. So here we go. Okay, and ending side one or part one with Happy and Bleeding. Yeah, this is really interesting. I really like the stripped down, raw production of it. It almost sounds like demos or like a high school band who doesn't really know how to record, and they're just sort of figuring it out, and they rented some equipment or something. But it has a charm to it that I really like about it. It's definitely not a bad thing. Cause it to me, it fits the songs perfectly.
Yeah. I wasn't sure what to think of it at first when I first heard it. Like, I've been fiddling with my volume knob a little bit, trying to get things to, you know, sound right. But,
yeah, the dynamics are kind of all over the place.
Yeah. I don't know if this was her first recording or what, but she's obviously a pretty sophisticated songwriter.
Yeah, this is her debut album. For this to be her debut, I mean, that's pretty pretty remarkable. Because you're right, she is a really really interesting songwriter, very unusual songwriter. It's hard to compare her to anybody, really. But yeah, you're right. She is a very, very, she definitely kind of knows what she's doing for sure. The one thing that, as much as I like the production, the first song, I did find the drums to be a bit harsh on the ears. And I don't know if that was just me. That did kind of bother me, but then I eventually did kind of settle into it.
Yeah, I was sort of thinking about that last song seemed a little bit quiet in the mix, but there was a lot of interesting things going on, and I kind of wish that maybe the bass was a little bit up.
Yeah, the bass was the main instrument, and it was way up in the mix, higher than anything else, even the vocals. So yeah, it sounds, that's the charm that I think about it. It's like you're kind of struggling to hear everything, but it has an amateurish quality to it. But it's that sort of, I don't know, I do like, I kind of like that it's not perfect. And you know, last week when we were listening to Peter Gabriel, I think that album is as good as it is. The songwriting is great, but the production is very slick, still natural, but it's just I don't think this could maybe use another pass at mixing. I don't think there's any instruments or anything that really need to be added or taken away. I just think maybe just another pass at.
If I were to compare it to anybody, like with that sort of amateurish production sort of thing, I would consider, I don't know, I compare with like the White Stripes stuff that came out, you know, towards the end of the decade. But it was well balanced. But everything's got this, you know, raw, stripped down sort of throw it at the wall, see what kind of sticks quality to it. But But yeah, everything still seemed kind of balanced on this. And this one, I just, another pass of at the mixing console probably would have done it fairly well, I think. But again, that's got nothing to do with her songwriting and her and the ideas she's putting forward. They're all really neat. There's nothing there I would really complain about. I don't think there's any, like, you know, decisions that she made as far as like the music goes I would disagree with. It's definitely different, but I find it, you know, it's enjoyable, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. It's sort of, I guess maybe a fair comparison would be that whole album that we did, maybe a month ago or so. And, because I was reading a little bit about that, and there was a movement called the Riot Girl movement. Basically it was an underground feminist punk movement that, like, it's kind of started in the 90s, and it was like around the Washington DC area. Washington DC is for some reason, it's a big punk rock town. When sort of the first wave of punk rock happened in the late 70s and it went sort of underground in the 80s, Washington DC was like a hub of punk bands for some reason. I don't know. Maybe it had something to do with Ronald Reagan. I don't know. But yeah, the Riot Girl scene sort of came out of that. And, you know, it's sort of like a pushback against, as much as I agree with the politics of some of the, a lot of the punk bands, it was very male dominated in the early 80s. And sort of the Riot Girl was sort of a push back against that, and sort of saying, like, well, no, you know, punk is for women too. We don't have to be like Madonna or anything. We can, you know, we have something to say as well that's just as important. And so the Riot Girl sort of movement was sort of born out of that attitude. So yeah, so it was interesting. So although Hole came out of L.A. and PJ Harvey is English, it's still sort of the same. They're still coming from the same place. They're speaking the same about the same issues, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it's sort of universal.
Yeah, it was just the first time that they really sort of started to speak up and be as aggressive as the men who were in the punk rock movement.
Yeah.
So even though this isn't really, I wouldn't really consider this a punk thing. It's more of a,
it's definitely more of a grunge thing, I think.
Yeah. More, I guess, alternative rock. It's not as hard and aggressive as punk rock. There's sort of a grunge sort of thing, although grunge wasn't really a genre. It all gets kind of muddy, but yeah, it did well in the early 90s. It fit in very well in the early 90s. The band is playing really well too. I believe the musicians, there's three of them. There's you got PJ Harvey, Steve Vaughn on bass, and Rob Ellis on drums, and Rob Ellis is also the one that produced the album. And it's sort of like they, although it is her album, they sort of considered themselves a band.
Yeah, it was sort of a band effort, but the band has got her name on it.
Exactly, kind of like Alice Cooper or something. But yeah, so far I am. Enjoying it. I did manage to find some interesting facts about the album, and this isn't really a big surprise, is that it was recorded very quickly and locally at Ice House in Yeovil. PJ Harvey's debut was tracked at a small local studio called The Ice House in Yeovil, Somerset, with the trio lineup, Polly, Gene Harvey, Rob Ellis, and Steve Vaughn. That scrappy local setting helped give the record its tight, raw sound. It wasn't a big budget, glossy production, but an urgent document of a band in the moment. And I have to say, yeah, I think, although they should have spent a little more time mixing it, it does feel like it doesn't feel rushed, but it's like, I've got something to say, and I need to get this out right away. I got to get my message out right away, because I need to get this out. I've got something that I need to get off my chest. It has that sort of feeling about it. So not surprising that it was recorded relatively quickly. It was recorded, in about 2 months, so from September to December 1991. This is kind of cool. The first pressings included demo versions, a collector's detail that points to the album's DIY roots. Early copies, the first 5,000 LPs and the first 1,000 CDs, included demo versions of tracks, underlining how Dry arrived with very little studio polish and more of a get-it-out-now mindset than a refined reissue plan. The choice reinforced the album's raw aesthetic and made those pressings sought after.
That's interesting. I'm wondering if those are some of the recordings we're hearing now.
It's possible. I don't think so. I think this is the album. Because there was a limited... The demo recordings were like included as like a bonus disc on.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't think these are the demo recordings, although they do sound like demos.
Some of them do. Yeah. That's what I'm really wondering about. So.
I would be curious to see how the demos compare to what they ended up putting out. I don't think it would be that different. To the early singles, Dress and Sheila Na Gig established the album's confrontational gender themes, drawing on myth and theatricality. Dress, and especially Sheila Na Gig, which is a song we haven't heard yet, showcased Harvey's knack for inhabiting characters and flipping sexual scripts. The latter name checks the medieval Sheila Na Gig carvings, figures sometimes associated with fertility and exposure, using that image to interrogate exhibitionism, shame, and desire in a way critics called part theatrical, part vicious. The songs helped frame the album as both provocative and literate. And yeah, that kind of really fits into the Riot Girl, not aesthetic, because that makes it seem like it's superficial, but the ethos, I guess.
Ethos, yes.
So the record label Too Pure backed the record with a very tiny budget, and the band's early gigs were as raw as the record. Too Pure reportedly gave PJ Harvey about £2,000 to make the album. Anecdotes from early shows, one promoter paid them to stop playing, paint a picture of a band that was uncompromising and mercilessly raw live. Traits that translated directly into the record's lean, bruising sound. That combination of shoestring funding and feral performance helped create Dry's mythic out-of-nowhere impact. So that's why the album sounds like it does, because they only had £2,000 to work with. So, which, if you know anything about trying to book studio time, that's really not a lot of money. So it's amazing that it got done at all, really. So they sort of did it in this this recording studio in this little town in England.
Yeah, although if I were to go into a studio, I wouldn't have exactly that kind of budget either. I don't know what it'd do.
Yeah, that's true. But you got to think, like, you would think that, like, a record company who's paying for your album to me, you would think that they would give you more than, you know, £2,000 to make the album.
Well, you know. This is a very small record company.
But yeah, well, and, you know, these days you can, you don't even need to go to the studio. And finally, the release made an immediate critical impression, and still reads as a blueprint for Harvey's fearless trajectory. From contemporary praise to 30th anniversary retrospectives, critics point to Dry as the moment PJ Harvey announced herself, stark, confrontational, bluesy, and theatrical in equal measure. The record's impact wasn't only as in singles or sales, but in establishing the artistic persona she would develop across later award-winning albums. I think I have heard some of her later stuff, and it is a little more, it's not polished, but it's a little more, it's a little better balanced. Obviously, having a little more experience.
A little more experience, a little bit bigger budget. Yeah.
That goes a long way for sure. So those were some interesting facts that I found about the album. But I guess we'll get back into the second half. And it starts with the song Sheila Na Gig. So here we go. You've got to see my bottle full of charm. I lay it all at your feet. You turn around and say back to me. He said, Sheila. All right, and ending the album with Water. Yeah, this was interesting. That's for sure. It wasn't dull. You know, the production, yeah, it could be a little better, but I think the songwriting, for this to be your debut album and for the songs to be this strong, is really, really impressive. It's just really impressive that she was, I don't know how old she was. She wasn't very old, like maybe, like 20.
Oh yeah.
23. Yeah. She was 23.
Okay.
When this, came out. So it's incredible that she was so young and obviously had a knack for writing really incredible and honest songs, not just songs, not just pop songs, but songs that are real, that are just from an honest place. From a pure, like, artistic sort of thing. It's really incredible. This is her debut album. Production, yeah, I can believe it, but the songwriting quality is. She's wise beyond her years.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, I would say overall the production seemed to be a little bit on the quiet side, which is not necessarily a bad thing. When it's steady, and it seemed to be pretty steady in the later half of the album. It was a little all over the place on the first half. But it still on the quiet side, but yeah, it sort of straightened itself out after a little while, and again, the songs are really good. And it's interesting how a lot of these artists just seem to write songs that sort of fit into the zeitgeist of the time. Like, she's not writing songs that sound like they're from another time or anything like that. They sound very much, well, I don't want to say they're strictly of their time, because there's a certain amount of timelessness to it, but it's definitely It's got that early 90s sort of thing going for it.
Yeah. It's almost like she's creating that sound in a way, you know? I mean, I know it's sort of been there. Like, she's not the first artist to fit in with that, but it's almost like she's one of the pioneers of that early 90s sort of style, you know? But yeah, you're right. It doesn't feel like she's, you know, like it doesn't feel like she's writing from a different time. You're right. I think it may be a generational thing. I hate that these days we divide everything by generations, but it, like, the early 90s Generation X thing, there is a definite sort of, people call it slacker, but it's not slackers. It's apathetic. It, from the outside, it looks apathetic, but it's really more, I think, burnt out from the world that had been happening at that time. And I think it was just like a, I don't think anybody planned to create a sound that was that. I think they were just, it was just, people were just being honest, and this sound sort of came out of that frustration that everybody was feeling.
Yeah, and I think to an extent you sort of see that again nowadays. Yeah, history repeats itself, and yeah, it's that sort of, not apathetic, not quite, but burnt out, definitely sort of, you know, pervades through the ages. But yeah, I thought it was a pretty good, overall, it's a pretty good album. So,
yeah. And, you know, I think if I can say one more thing about the production, is one thing I do like about it is that there's not a lot of effects. And
oh, there's like nothing. It's basically just, it's very stripped down. It feels almost like a sort of a live show. There's barely any effects on their guitars, maybe a little bit of overdrive or something like that. Just to,
yeah. No pun intended, but it is very dry. And, you know, it's, if, yeah, you're right. It feels like you're not even seeing them live. It's like you're seeing them play in your living room or something. But anyway, we could go on about that. But what would be your three highlights on the album?
It's sort of tough, but there was a pretty good run in at the beginning of the second half, like Sheila Nagig, Hair, and Joe. I thought that was pretty good. That kept my interest up pretty well. So I think those three songs are probably my favorites.
Yeah, I would say. Yeah, Sheila Nagig, definitely. I really like the last song, Water. And yeah, I think I liked Happy and Bleeding too. I think those were probably my, I like the song itself, not necessarily the production, but yeah, I those would be my picks. So yeah, I guess that brings us to the question, is would you listen to this album again?
I believe so. Yeah, probably. I wouldn't listen to it a lot, but, you know, to put it on once in a while, it's if I'm in the mood for something from this era or something like that, this is a pretty good one to turn to.
Yeah, I agree. I think I feel the same way. Yeah, if I'm, you know, have a, in the mood for something early 90s alternative, this would be in that rotation for sure. I would definitely listen to this. So I think we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. We would love to hear from you. If you want to drop us a line, you can do that by going to our contact page on the website, polyphonicpress.com/contact. And while you're on the website, you can get all these past episodes that we've done so far, and any updates and anything like that. And if you feel inclined to help us out, you can do that by going to our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. And you can, if this is your first time listening to us, give us a rating and review, and follow the show wherever you're listening on all the podcast platforms. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.